Vancouver, reel 4.
Where we stay, as I say, in Loveday, I forget the exact time, but then we came back to Tatura, but in a different camp, because there were 4 camps, actually. And we stayed there until the boys were released. I was one of the last to be released, because I had been sent to a punishment camp for being a naughty boy.
Oh, what had you done?
I hadn't done much. I'd written a letter mentioning that we had been under the tents in Loveday with a lot of scorpions and spiders and that, you know, to my friends. And they said, you mustn't write that. So I said, well, it's the truth. We were put under the tents and there were all these things wriggling about. So the colonel said, you must rewrite that. And I said, well, you can censor it. I wasn't in a very good mood, you know. Something had got me down or whatever. And so I said, just censor it. You censor our letters, you know. So she said, no, you rewrite it. So I didn't. I reposted it. So the next day I was called up again and he said, you didn't rewrite? I said, no. I said, it's the truth. I said, there's nothing military about that. I'm not giving any secrets away. So he said, no, you have to rewrite it. So I said, went out and I reposted it. So, you know, the few bad days I had most probably, like everybody else. And of course he said, I'll send you somewhere. I said, oh. So he sent me all the way to this camp, which was full of quite a lot of nasty people. One had murdered his wife and that sort of thing. But I was quite happy. I was better off there because they sent me out to work. Chopped down trees. There were a lot of overhanging trees on the River Murray and a place called Berry, B-R-R-I. And they wanted to make a beach out of that, so all the overhanging trees had to be cut down and with chains drawn out. And I was very happy because I went out in the morning and came home at night. So I was actually better off than where I was before. So I stayed there for 3 months, then he brought me back. And I was, if it hadn't been for my father, I would have asked to stay over there. Although the few of them were quite criminals. I think most of them were from the Mafia, you know. They ran the camp. It's like being in a prison. You hear of these people in prison who run the warders and run the governor. It was the same here, because when I got there, one of them met me, big beard, the leader, and he said, oh, you've been sent to us. I said, yes. You know, I was a little scared, actually. And he said, I'll take you around the camp. Don't worry about anybody. I'll look after you, which he did. And went into the hall there, and they were playing roulette and blackjack with proper money. And I said, we're not allowed money in where I've just come from. There, it's the camp money, like Monopoly money, you know. Which is, oh, we run things here. And they were inside with guards, but they were running the camp, you know. Just like a prison when you get inside that some big chief is running the camp. And so after 3 months I came back and got back to normal. Then I think after about a year or 10 months we were released, you know.
When Italy was out of the war, you know, there was the armistice. Did that make a difference to you immediately?
No, not immediately. No, a few went out, quite a while after Italy came out of the war, before any of ours were released. And the first lot that were released went to work for the Allied Works Council in a forest chopping down trees. And some were sent to different places, depended on your health. You had a medical check-up. And three of them were sent to an agricultural college, Duke Agricultural College. And then I was supposed to be released, and I said, well, what about my father? He said, oh, he's come through yet. I said, well, I'm not going out. So I did a month voluntary internment. And then when he got out, I got in Melbourne, I got him a job in an orphanage, sleeping in and cooking for the orphans who went out to work every day, so he would do breakfast and then at night dinner. So I got him fixed up, and then I was supposed to join them in the forest, chopping down trees. But I went to have a medical check-up, and they found I had an enlarged heart. I used to do a lot of athletics, you know, which is no bother, touch wood, you know, it's never been any bother. And so he said, well, you find yourself a job here in Melbourne, you know, but there's only certain jobs. So I went to wash dishes at the Alexander Hotel in Melbourne, which was the second best in those days, 1944. And then when the manageress came in the kitchen, Miss Foley, I said, excuse me, I said, any chance of coming into the restaurant? I've just been released. She says, I know all about you. And she says, well, you can come in the restaurant at 9 o'clock tomorrow. So I washed dishes for 24 hours and then started work as a waiter, which I had never done, you see. I'd been, as I said, in a tailor. I was manager of a tailor shop. I was cutter and fitter. So I thought there's one way to get out. And so I said, you know, I can't serve spoon and fork, you know, silver service. She says, it doesn't matter. Just put it in front of the customers. She was a bit abrupt against men. She had been left at the altar and she'd turned grey overnight. And she sort of just put it in front of them because most of the customers were men, you know, the war was still on, and let them serve themselves, just like that, which I did for a week, and then I picked up how to serve. And I was there for 18 months, you know, and had a very nice time there, really, with a crowd up there. And after about 18 months, there was a ship that brought us back to England.
During that time,
Athlone Castle.
During the time you were working, you know, and getting paid, presumably,
yes.
Were you able to have your own lodgings?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I got a small flat with Mrs. Burns, very Irish, very churchy. And she said, I will let you have it, says, on one condition, you'd never bring a woman in here. You know, so I said, oh, no fear of that. I said, I got there. And I was there for a while, and she was very nice. Very nice indeed. Yes, the first day we came out, we went to a terrible lodging house, the Victoria Palace. I shall never forget it. It was filthy. But, you know, you didn't know where to go. And they sent you there. I think they were getting commission, you know, from me. But I soon found this. I went hare and hunting, and I found this. And there was one room, a small kitchen and a bathroom, and there was another room, and she said, well, I do want another lodger, and he'll have to come and use your bathroom. I said, oh no. I said, how much do you want for the two rooms? She says, but you don't want two rooms. I said, no, but how much do you want? She said, 30 shillings. So I said, right, I'll take the lot, and you can use a small room for whatever you want to. So I was there for 18 months, very nice, with Mrs. Burns. She was wonderful, yes, got the real strong Irish accent. She was a widow and had two young daughters. Had quite a lot of fun there. Not there, actually, in Melbourne, once we were out. Well, once we were out, of course, we were out, you know. We just had to report every now and again, but it was my bad. As a matter of fact, if it hadn't been for my mother and father, I wouldn't have come back here, because a lot of them stayed out there, you know. 22, I think, stayed out there. There's only about two left who should have come over for Sunday's do, and they were told too late. Unfortunately, I would like to have seen Marco Gazzi and Rossi from Wales, both from Wales. Marco Gazzi and Rossi, what was his name? Peter, I think. I'm not sure, Rossi. So they stayed out there, and they all did very well. Marco Gazzi had five butcher shops, and he's still got them now, let out. And they all did very well out there, you know. So the stay out there was very nice.
Well, what was the situation regarding tribunals with Italians? You know, were you, did it ever crop up going to a tribunal?
No, not for the youngsters. No, we didn't even go to a tribunal with Major Layton. You see, they had gone through all the papers, I believe, and they found out that, as I say, 75% of these people should never have been picked up. So they only gave them the tribunal. The youngsters who were of military age, or maybe the under 30s or under 35, they weren't even considered. You see, it was the older ones that considered, they realised that They should never have been put in Sarajevo Tribunal, and they would have been released. Had they been left in England, such as the Isle of Man, they would have been sent home right away, you see. But from Australia, with shipping as it was a very, very difficult thing to do, to get people back home.
How about your own journey home? You know, this would have been before the end of the war, would it?
No, it was all over.
It was all over,
yes. The war was all over, 1946.
So it's a long time you were out there, wasn't it?
Yes, I was there from 1940 to 1946, actually. Got there. But I was interned for 4 years and 4 months altogether. 10th of June, 11th of June, and I came out in October. So it's June, July, August, September, October. 4 years and 4 months.
How did you think of that as a young man?
Well, as I say, I think the rest are the same. We were not surprised to have been picked up, as we were of military age, as I say. And it was just one of those things. You know, had we been out, we must have been in the army and gone finished up in the goodness knows where.
You don't sound at all bitter.
No, not at all, no. I said that on the TV documentary, 83. It's not bitter, it's a thing that we sort of expected, you know. It's the sort of thing that we expected. Didn't expect to be picked up and to go through what we went through, but we weren't surprised at that, and we took it logically. And that,
I think you sound a bit more unhappy about the Dunera, though, don't you?
Well, yes, the Dunera I do. That's the thing I do. I mean, the Arandora, after all, I'm not sticking up for the Germans, but they saw this ship armed, and it was their duty to sink it. I mean, there's nothing at all. It's a Dunera thing that I think this should never have happened, but as I say, I don't know about these officers and the men, because some English soldiers deserted in Cape Town, some deserted in Fremantle, and some deserted in Melbourne, and they caught two being burglars in the Melbourne suburbs. So I don't know what sort of soldiers they were, really, where they came from. I think there was Norfolk Knights, but I'm not quite sure, because they didn't have anything on their thing there, you know, so...
Did they look rough types?
Oh yes, definitely, yes. Yes, definitely rough types. We never got to the bottom of it. Some people said that they'd been released from prison just to take us over. Whether that's true or not, I wouldn't like to say. It's just hearsay. So I wouldn't make a statement about that. They certainly were a rough lot. And we actually did see them. I sort of didn't consider myself like Jesus Christ, but when they'd taken the things off of us, they would play dice to see who would get this and who would get that. The same way as they did to Jesus Christ, so we're told, about his clothes or whatever. And we could see them as we went up the stairs, they were playing dice to see who would get this watch and who would get that ring and that sort of thing. So I'm very bitter about Dunera, yes, I must say. But about internment in general and the Arandora, I'm really not bitter about it at all. Not there.
Do you think, looking back on your 4-odd years that you were interned, that you gained anything from that experience?
No. Well, yes, I did. I did gain quite a lot of experience, especially those years. I was 24 to 28, which is an important part of a man's life, I think, during that time. Growing your youth and... you've become a man and you've gone out into the world, which I sort of missed, you know, so it was all the experience I gained inside, really. But the trip back was very nice out there. We did Melbourne, then Fremantle, and we had 12 days in the Indian Ocean, which was just marvellous, you know. It was like sitting here. There were very few people on board. Then we stayed in Bombay 5 days, and of course we picked on 5,000 English troops. Then of course it was congested all the way home. But it was still a nice trip, except for the weather, which was atrocious there when we came here. It was snow and ice at Southampton, you know. And we'd been used to the sunshine for 4 years odd there, never used a coat or anything. But we came back to sort of life here.
How did you pick up the threads of your...
Well, I went to see my boss, Mr. Goldberg, there in the tailoring. It was very nice. He actually sent me a parcel out to Australia. He was very nice indeed. And he said, well, when you were taken away, I couldn't put anybody else in. There was nobody about. Everybody was going in the army. And I closed it up. And, of course, 5-6 years have passed, and I'm getting older, and I've still got three shops. He had seven shops. Still got three shops, and he said, if you want to go and work under Mr. Coote in Leicester Square next to the Hippodrome again, I said, no, I don't feel like doing that. So I went to see a friend, had a restaurant in off Regent Street, Beak Street, very old friend of mine, and he said, well, why don't you come here and help me out? And I went there for 8.5 years. That's how I got into catering. I didn't want to go into catering because it's a terrible life. Yeah, there's no family life. You see, you don't see your children. If you have any children, it's a terrible life. You're out every night. The wife is home on her own. And so I didn't want to go into it. And then I went into it and carried on that way. And I stayed 8.5 years with Albert. And then I opened my own restaurant for 21 years. And then I went to work for a lady who came from Italy to work for me 25 years previously. I brought her over from Italy as a waitress and to learn English. And then after many years, she got to know the business and spoke to a customer who opened a restaurant for her in Chelsea. So after all that time, I came back from Italy when I sold out. And I went to see her and she said, what are you doing? I said, nothing, but I'm 53 and I've got to work. She says, come and help me out. I'm in a terrible mess here. And I stayed there 6.5 years, and she married one of the customers, and the little girl from the Tuscany village of Castelnuovo became Lady Wadden. She married one of our customers, Lord Wadden. Yeah, up there. Alpha often phoned me up there. He's very nice. And she's done very well for herself. Thank you very much.
How about your mother?
My mother was in Italy.
Was she?
Dying. Well, she was in England when the war broke out with Germany. And then we'd go to the embassy to find out what to do. And they said, well, there's nothing at the moment, you know. Italy wasn't expected to enter the war anyway. But we thought it better we'd send mother to Italy. You see, and we carried on working. And she was in Italy all during the war and came back after the war when we came back and settled down and got a little place. So she came back and stayed here for about 20 years, and then they both went to Italy and retired.
Did she have any idea what had happened to you and your father?
Oh, yes. Well, she, yes, had a good idea, yes. Well, you could write a letter once a fortnight, but it took about 6 months to get there. You know, it was obvious out there.
Do you think it was an advantage being with your father in camp, or were there drawbacks to it?
Oh, it didn't make any difference at all.
Did you keep together as a family unit, or were you...
Well, he was in another hut, actually, with a lot of his chef friends. They all got together, you know, the 14 of them into one hut. So he was in hut number 3, and... Well, we saw each other every day, of course. He was in hospital for 3 months when they landed because they took him off in a stretcher amongst other people from Adunera. He was too weak. And then he came after 3 months with the two doctors, Dr. Zedzi and Dr. Manzocchi. And Dr. Zedzi, after a while, he went to another hut and he wrote a letter to ask if he could come in our hut. Don't know why, I'm sure, and he slept underneath me, Dr. Zedzi. And he was the European doctor for Elizabeth Arden, the perfume people. And he wrote to her and spoke about me. He said, I'm sleeping under a young man, that sort of thing, his name, so-and-so. And she wrote to us and sent us little parcels of Ardena powder and that, you know. Can you imagine that when they arrived the first night, as I was hut leader, we were counted four times a day. So at night time I would go out and speak to the captain and he would take my word for it, you know. And when I got back inside, I sprayed all this perfume over my palliasse, you know. When you haven't been near a woman for 3 years, it was quite a bit of a laugh.
No. Yes, I was wondering, you know, how the young men, how you coped with that.
Well,
was there any interaction with Australian girls?
No, no way you could get anywhere. There's no way. No, we were inside the camp all this time. We were not allowed out at all. Never allowed out. No, we could only see them when the girls came to visit their fathers or their brothers who were on sentry duty from a long way up there. We had no contact at all with any woman for 4 years and 4 months. No, actually, well, we didn't have any contact at all. We had at a period, there were some women and girls that came from one of the islands, the Samoan islands, who were put inside, I don't know what for. And I got talking to one, Margarita, who actually told me she'd had her grandmother's heart. That put me off. Not that there was anything in it, because they were the other side of barbed wire, but, you know, they came from some of those islands that still carried on with some things like that.
But she had the actual heart of her mother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The grandmother.
The grandmother, mm-hmm.
Yes. So, but that was the only, that was no contact, of course, but to speak to any woman for those 4 years and 4 months until we got out, of course, that's not there. But as I say, we suffered because you were locked up, but we didn't suffer in the same way as some prison camps. They had no food and the danger that there was for years and years, you know. That was it. Came back and carried on with life, went to work for my friend and then mine, and just gone. The years have just passed.
And really, 50 years, isn't it? Was it not 50 years? 50 years, the anniversary of the Arundel Star.
That's right, 50 years last week.
Yes, I wonder what you thought just about second. You being invited by the Imperial War Museum to that gig.
Well, I thought that was rather nice. Yes, of course, we have been there before, you know, but just the two of us, Vic and I, and his wife came. But been there was quite a few years ago.
Did you meet people there that you hadn't seen for some time?
No. It was only the three of us, actually, because of this. They have a copy of these downstairs in the archives, photocopies of these, and there was a letter that I had from them that had been put downstairs from the Imperial War Museum. And, you know, we've done these documentaries and this book and this one here and now the other one they're doing. And somebody else came from the Polytechnic, the London Polytechnic, for something or other. I don't know what, just for their records, I suppose.
I wonder, you know, at the Imperial War Museum little celebration, did you see the guard of the Arundora Star?
That's right, yes.
Did you recognise him?
No, I didn't know. Duckworth, or Duxbury.
Duxbury.
He was there on Sunday.
Was he?
He was at lunch. He was invited to lunch, yes, Duxbury.
Sunday was a big celebration, wasn't it?
Well, it was actually 50 years exactly. Well, one day out, actually, because July the 2nd had been on a Monday, so they had him on the Sunday. And the service was marred, the ambassador was there, the consulate was there. It was the ambassador who pinned on the decorations.
Seven others.
That's right, yes.
That one I showed you, yes.
Yes, it's for what it's worth. Anyway, it's after 50 years, of course. Had they done it many years ago, they would have had to give 200 medals out, as it so happens. There's only seven left. Well, there's more than seven left. There's, I think, 12 to 15... the survivors left all together, you know, all over the world. So, but there was only seven of us on Sunday who received it. I presume they'll send the others on, you know, because they were invited, these people. And, well, one from Scotland is 92, so he didn't come down, and The other one's not very well. 50 years is a long time.
Did they explain the reasons for the medal, you know, was it?
Well, not really. It's the same as they gave out. It's only about 10 years ago that they gave some of the soldiers of the First World War this same decoration. So after so many years, they think, well, let's give out a few medals, you know. There's no bravery or anything attached to it whatsoever. It's just that after so many years and a few are still left, so they give out these medals. That's typical anyway.
Well, Nicky, thank you very much indeed.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. I hope it's been a little help. Well,
I think
you've known the story anyway. So no.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
A lot of your time.
Anytime, if you want anything, I say I'll be back in September. But if there's any details you want clearing up, and get in touch.